Hey guys, welcome to this week's podcast episode, and I've got a fantastic guest for you today, Chad Wagner, and he's an author, and he talks a lot about God and faith. Again, and this is kind of a big macro picture. He's also a pastor. He's got a degree in electrical engineering and engineering as well, and he's got a really fantastic story. And today's topic is big picture economics, libertarianism, thoughts on Bitcoin. I'm really curious to ask him about that, as well as kind of the state of the nation. I think our nation is falling apart, but I'm here to happy to answer his or have Chad on the show. So welcome, Chad.
Well, thank you, Christopher. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, talk about your story and your journey, and we'll dive right into it.
I'm a pastor. I've been in the ministry now for 11 years. Just had my 11 year anniversary here recently. And I grew up in Pennsylvania. I spent some time in Cincinnati in a church there where I was trained and ordained for the ministry. And then I was ordained and sent off to Minnesota. I pastored up there for 5 years. And then I came down here to Missouri, where I'm living now, and I've been pastoring here for 6 years. And personally, I'm, as you said, I identify as a libertarian politically, as far as that goes, and interested in economics and things like that. And I mean, my primary interest, of course, is spiritual things and biblical things. And the book that I wrote is on the grace of God, and that's something that's very important in my life. As well, but I get involved in different things and just like intellectual pursuits and things like that.
One thing that is really interesting is I've talked to I'm a libertarian myself, because I've seen this, like I was talking to the previous podcast guest, and like in the 80s, 90s, the United States was a dominant country. It was like the best place to live, so much economic freedom, opportunity, you name it. We had the best, like, healthcare, education, techno, everything. And then all of a sudden it started to, like, now we're a debtor nation. Our kids can't compete educationally against other countries. Our, technologically, we're still number one, but China and all these other Asian countries are quickly catching up. Our transportation is shambles, healthcare is terrible, all these things. But so talk about libertarian ideals and values, and how it plays into this state of the economy.
I guess fundamentally, libertarianism is defined with the non-aggression principle, which says that you can't initiate aggression against somebody else. And everybody would agree with that on the face of it, right? Until you start applying it to everybody, right? So if I'm not allowed to kill you and take your stuff, then neither is the government or anybody else, right? They're not allowed to initiate aggression also, or they're not supposed to. So anytime the more and more government intrudes into our lives and our freedoms, or into our lives, the less freedom we have, right? And that's, as you described it, that's basically what's happening here in all facets of society. And you notice that anything that the government gets involved in, it gets really bloated, it gets really expensive. Like, for instance, education or healthcare or something, the price of a college degree is insane these days, and it's not really worth anything. Healthcare is extremely expensive. Why is that? Well, because you have government involvement in all of those things heavily. And anything they get involved in, they get involved in the housing market, and housing prices, go way up because of regulation, because of things like that. And so anyway, in a libertarian society, if you could have such a place, in which we essentially did in the founding of this country for a long time, in that type of society, most things are just left up to people and individuals. And individuals interact with each other, they exchange with each other, they do business with each other when they want to. And in that society, things are peaceful. People are focused on providing goods and services for their fellow man. And that is going to cause people to treat other people decently, because if you want to get somebody's money in a free market society, in a capitalistic society, you have to provide them goods and services that they want or need, and you can't, treat them poorly or do violence against them or anything like that. So in that type of society, it maximizes freedom, and it maximizes wealth and happiness, as far as that goes. Also, tying it into spiritual things, of course, in that kind of society, you also have to have people that are moral, that have virtue and values, that can regulate themselves. But if you don't have a moral people, then that's when government becomes more and more necessary and people start calling for it. And then a lot of freedoms are taken away. If we can't police ourselves, if we can't behave ourselves, essentially, then we end up with a lot of government to do it for us. And that's kind of the state I think that we're in now today.
And, you know, you mentioned, I think, you know, if you were to mention like any politician's name, it's usually associated with, you know, it's being a, you know, very negative connotations. And it's like the, you know, the idea of a politician in the past when I was growing up, it was like, yeah, they're respected leaders. And, but now it's kind of like they are criminals and they are white collar criminals and they, you know, they bribe people and they, you know, they do various things to gain influence for themselves. So, you know, like I said, like, and then just kind of like the moral fabric of society is like I said, I'm spiritual and I see like people mean to each other and, you know, people stealing from each other and just kind of just, you know, like I said, just kind of gluttony and just, you know, hoarding and consuming and just, you know, blame disregard for rules and law and things. So, one thing I interesting is, libertarian ideals in the concept of money, because obviously our money, idea of money these days has been really tainted with, you know, debt and inflation and, you know, just basically the government spending things on war and just useless things. So talk about, you know, libertarianism and the concept of money.
Yeah, those two things are so intertwined, because if you have a truly free market, you need to have a free market in money also. And money is just is the most exchangeable commodity, essentially. It's a medium of exchange. And so if you have true money, then you can have more true liberty and freedom. But when if money is just created by fiat, if it's created by the government and put into circulation, and then they can control the value of it by deflating it, by creating a bunch more of it, and to fund all the programs and everything, then the value of that money continually degrades over time and people get poorer and poorer. And so if we had a free market in money, like if we had gold, like we did back in the, from the founding of the country up through the early 1900s, we had a very prosperous society at that time because money maintained its value. So in those days, you didn't need to speculate in the stock market or the casino, which is basically like a casino these days. You didn't need to speculate in there if you didn't want to, if you didn't know anything about it. All you had to do to build wealth was just to save gold coins. And over time, prices of everything fell in the mid to late 1800s until the creation of the Federal Reserve, our central bank. Prices continually slowly fell. And that's a really good thing. It's great when things get cheaper over time. See, when you and I, as we've grown up, we've heard our grandparents and our parents talk about, you know, when I was a kid, things were only, you know, you could buy a candy bar for a nickel or something. And then I can tell my, you know, if I had kids, you know, when I was a kid, I could buy a candy bar for 50 cents. And now you can buy a candy bar for what, $2 or something. So you see, like, things continually get more and more expensive because of inflation. But back when we were on a gold standard, it wasn't like that. If you lived in the early 1900s and you talked to your grandfather, he would have said, you know, candy bars were a lot more expensive when I was a kid and they've gotten cheaper, right? So that's what happens on a free market. Yeah. You can, when you produce more and more things and the supply of the money stays about the same, then the value of that money actually increases because that money can buy more and more things. Yeah. When you inflate the money, then you lose the value of it and you ultimately lose your freedom, because whoever controls the money supply can really, you control the population, and it ends up going, when the new money is created, it goes to special interest. It goes to people that get a hold of it first and they benefit from it, and everybody else loses, because by the time everybody else gets that new money that was created, it's been debased. It's already lost its value. So it's, I think it's essential for a free society to have sound money.
Yeah. Yeah, I have thoughts that they say that the president is the most powerful man, but I actually think that I think that Jerome Powell or whoever is actually the most powerful because he controls the price of money and he controls the amount of money in circulation. And if you're chair of the Federal Reserve in for now the most powerful country, you have a lot of influence, especially with when it comes to like money, because that's just so fundamental. We need it to exchange value. And one thing I'm sure because a lot of like, for example, Austin and a lot of early Austin is huge libertarian culture. I think a lot of liberal in like Berkeley, San Francisco, these areas. And you mentioned gold standard, but I think gold standard is is kind of like it might it's like a kind of like a Gen X boomer type concept. And like for example millennials and Gen Z, they're like, yeah, gold is not going to do it, it's not going to go anywhere. But there's this new asset that's very similar to gold that has the same concepts as gold, but it's like but it gives me more hedge against dollar devaluation, inflation, and that's Bitcoin. But I'm not sure what your thoughts on that. Like people, I still get people after 15 years that are saying it's a Ponzi scheme. And if you don't understand it after 15 years, you probably aren't going to get it. But, again, Bitcoin is not for everybody. So what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are I wish I would have bought Bitcoin when I first heard about it in 2012. I've listened to Peter Schiff myself. I don't know if you're familiar with Peter Schiff or not, but
Yeah.
he's probably one of the biggest like anti-Bitcoin guys out there. And so he came out against Bitcoin, way back in the very beginning because of its more of like a fundamental philosophical reason that it's nothing, right? There's no
Yeah.
tangible thing there. I have not ever bought into Bitcoin, and I think, and who knows, but I don't think it's going to be a long-term replacement for gold. And the reason for that is because it does not have intrinsic value, right? There is like a Bitcoin is nothing. It's a blockchain. It's the entry into a blockchain or something, but there you can't really do anything with a Bitcoin except for exchange it to somebody else who thinks it's going to go up in value, right?
Yeah.
And so if the only thing you can do with a Bitcoin is hold it and hope it goes up in value and then sell it to somebody else because they think it's going to go up in value more,
Yeah.
right? Then it doesn't fulfill the promises that it was supposed to when it was created. When it was created, it was supposed to be a digital medium of exchange. You can buy a cup of coffee with it. Well, then it quickly wasn't possible to do that because of the size of the blockchain and all that, with you have to download the whole ledger. And so it just got really slow and really expensive for
Yeah.
smaller transactions. And I guess I don't follow it real closely, but I guess they have the Lightning Network and they're trying to address some of those things. And
Yeah.
maybe they'll be able to. But I just think fundamentally, unless it would become a medium of exchange where you could actually use it for money, I don't see how it's going to last long term, because I think once you run out of people that are wanting to buy it just because they think it's going to go up in value, then
Yeah.
eventually it's going to go way down in value. And I personally think that probably the long term value of Bitcoin will be whatever its actual utility is. So I think it is valuable for some things today. Like for instance, if you were a very wealthy person and you wanted to get out of Dodge and move to another country, and you can't take your assets with you, you can't, they could freeze your bank accounts or whatever. But if you can memorize your password in your head, you can take your money, you can take your Bitcoin with you anywhere, right? And so it would be valuable for something like that. But how many people are there that really need to do that? Or it might be valuable for sending, larger amounts of money, in foreign countries and things. So I think there will be some utility for it, but
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't see it replacing regular money, the dollar, practically is, I don't see it anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting because like I said, because it's really a new technology, so a lot of these criticisms, these are valid. It's basically a technological solution to the problem of money. So it addresses some things, but it doesn't address others. So like I said, like you're not able to pay for things with gold either, but you can use gold as a hedge against debasement. Of course, you can't, I mean, if you're caught in the airport carrying like bars of gold, you're gonna get questioned then. So, but like if you have your if you have your seed, you have your cold wallet, that's you make, hold, whatever amount that you want. But so, yeah, it's quite interesting. Bitcoin is kind of like what I view it as, kind of like digital land, digital gold. There's gold, and it's kind of like, but it's, like I said, it's so slow, you can't really buy a cup of coffee, and if you do, you're going to get taxed on it. It's quite interesting to see where these things go. How can people contact you and find you and, follow your work and, check you out? 'Cause you have a lot of interesting slants.
Pretty much everything I do is on pastorwagner.com. And then my book can be found at truegracebook.com. That will redirect to a page on pastorwagner.com. It's just a simple way. But yeah, on pastorwagner.com, I have my sermons and Bible studies and outlines and blogs. And I mostly write on Christian spiritual things. I did write some stuff when the pandemic was happening. I was not happy about that at all, to say the least. And so I did write a few articles about that and the mask mandates and things like that that were very irritating to me. So anyway, but yeah, pastorwriter.com would be where you can find the things I've done.
Oh, one last question that I think one of the audience might be interested in hearing is if for example, if they see like the values of just basically democracy and society, is there any place that they can go? Like, I know like can you go to Latin America, Europe? Are there any zones where like these libertarian cultures and values are vibrant and people are kind to each other? The government doesn't debase its currency, the government's fiscally responsible, doesn't start wars. What kind of areas would people look to diversify geographically?
I'm not an expert in that. I mean, I've heard people talk about Costa Rica before. Personally, it seems like a pretty decent place. They've been neutral for most of their history anyway, as far as wars and that kind of thing go. But I don't know. It seems like the whole world has been so affected by everything. If there's one thing the United States exports, it's their bad ideas. It seems like these days, and like the whole world has been so corrupted by it, the Western world especially. That's a good question. I don't think I have a very good answer for it.
I've recently heard this term, geographical diversity, and just kind of or geographical arbitrage, and kind of basically a lot of people with means are they see what country's going and they're kind of like hedging their bets and not so it's interesting.
And there could be, it depends on how it turns out in Argentina, because they had their new president's a libertarian. I mean, he's like a Ludwig von Mises, Rothbard guy. And so I don't know how that'll pan out, but it was pretty cool seeing somebody of that political persuasion getting elected. But I guess when you've been in Argentina and things have been so bad for so long, then maybe they're finally fed up with statism and big government. And maybe it'll work. I hope it does for them. And so maybe someday that'll be the new United States, the United States of the 18th century or something.
I really enjoyed this conversation, and thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Christopher. Appreciate it.